Hey, Dreamers, this is Kamanzi Constable, the author of Stop Chasing Influencers. What I want to tell you is this: you have a choice to make right now. You can choose to accept the circumstances that you're in, good or bad, or you can choose to rise above them. You have a choice to make. Only you can make that choice. Life may be hard. There a lot of things may be going wrong right now in your life, but if you choose that you want to do something about it, that's the first step. Choose to do something about it and then take action. And you can overcome the situation you're in and you can live the life of your dreams.
Hey, Dreamers. I'm Joe Pardo. And today I'm talking with Shannon Albert, who is making her dreams come true by running a Disney World website. Thank you for coming on the show, Shannon.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Not a problem. We ran into each other like by accident. I guess it was accident by not accident while at Podcast Movement in Lee Cockrell's his talk at Podcast Movement.
We did. We bonded over our mutual dislike of the word webinar, which seems to be something that almost every podcaster, at least in the business niche, likes to talk about. And I'm tired of that word.
That's right. I forgot about that part. Yeah. Because I'm not a webinar fan. I've sat on a couple of them, and it kind of boggles my mind that people are so high on their horse about them, and mm-hmm. and people that many, you know, as many people go to them as they do.
I'm shocked as well. I don't attend them, and I would love it if we could just ban them altogether. But I guess that's not going to happen.
No, I mean, you know, where there's money being made.
Yeah, there's a reason they're doing it, I guess, right?
Yeah. I mean, with people showing up in really high numbers and converting in really high numbers, it's hard. You know, it's hard to argue with success. But to me, it's just not. It's not how I want to go about staking my claim in the world.
That's right. We agree on that.
Well, we also agree about Disney World being amazing.
Yes, all the Disney things. Love it.
So why don't we get started by giving some background about yourself, Shannon?
So my background actually is very technical. I have a degree in computer programming, worked as a web developer for corporations. And for the past 10 years, about 10 years ago or so, I took my first trip to Disney World. And it was just supposed to be, you know, like everybody else. Oh, it's our first trip. And before our kids get too old, we'll go. But I was addicted instantly. And with a background in programming and the love of Disney World, I thought I would love to start a Disney World website. But it was so overwhelming and sort of intimidating to imagine. And so I didn't do it for a long time. And then finally, a few years ago, my daughter was getting ready to graduate high school. And I was very upset about it, because I had her when I was 20, so we had kind of grown up together, and I couldn't imagine life without her. And so I thought, okay, instead of making her life miserable by being upset that she's going to do the normal thing and go to college and move out, I will create something that I can focus on that'll be a way to channel my energy. So about 3.5 years ago, I started www.prepschool.com. And I had a corporate job at the same time. And so they were both going on for about a year. And then after a year, I realized that it was really starting to take off. So I quit my corporate job, and it's been my full-time job now for a little over 2 years.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. It's, you know, Disney and techies go hand in hand, because I think they just get it a lot easier, you know?
Yeah, I think the part that's missing for a lot of people that they think, oh, I have a passion for Disney and I can create websites, is also a business component. And so that's been a real passion as well. I mean, you and I met at a business conference. And I think just sort of adding that into the mix really makes a big difference.
Oh, I agree. I mean, just because you know how to put together a website doesn't necessarily mean that you know how and what to do on the business end of things. You know, I come from a small business background, so I see it, right? And I, what I love about Disney is the ability for them to take something that should really is just like a numbers game, as far as like how many people can we get in the park, how many people can go on a ride, how many people can you get on the ride per hour, you know, et cetera, and turn it into something that's magical and is really like a live piece of art.
Right. I totally agree. And in some ways, running a website is like that too. I mean, you kind of have to focus on analytics and numbers and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But then there's this component, very human component, that you have to keep in mind at the same time.
Definitely. Definitely. So what were some of the first steps you took to get WDW Prep School started?
Well, so before I launched it, I really took a lot of time to figure out, like, who did I really think my ideal readers were going to be, and how, what was the thing that's going to make me stand out compared to, there's so many websites. I mean, it's like one of the busiest travel niches on the internet. So I spent 3 weeks developing an infographic and a planning process. It's a 6-step planning process that I have, it's sort of been the backbone of the site. And so I really thought through what this like pillar content and ideal customer stuff was going to be like, which is all kind of terms that you hear about a lot in online marketing, but it works. So it was, there was a lot of planning that went into it. And then I launched it, and it, you know, you always, when you launch things, there's, it's like crickets. Nobody knows you exist. It's hard to get the word out. But if you create something of value, then, you know, a few people see it, then they want to share it, and it sort of can build from there. So very humble beginnings, but it really, you know, has grown over time.
So what was the most important part for you, like when you were like, all right, I'm going to get started. Like, how did you figure out what you were going to focus on?
Well, it was – so I was sort of wanted to tap into where I was when I was planning my first Disney World trip. And it was this feeling of complete overwhelm and excitement at the same time, because there's a lot to know. I mean, if you plan a trip to, you know, just about anywhere, you don't have to do a whole lot of work, but going to Disney World takes some time. And it's only gotten harder over the last 10 years because you have to plan so far ahead. So I really wanted to tap into that mindset, because I actually emailed somebody that ran a website many years ago, 10 years ago. And I told her, I'm overwhelmed. Can you help me? What can you do? Can you plan my trip? You know, and she pointed me to a website that was helpful, and I was on my way. So I was sort of trying to tap into that person, like that girl who was overwhelmed. And so that's my passion. Those are the people I tend to focus on the most. But there's lots of ways to run websites. I mean, you can focus on adults only, which people do, or, you know, luxury travel. There's a lot of different niches that can live under the sort of travel and Disney World umbrella. This just happens to be my passion.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, if everyone from adults that are going without kids to like late teenagers that are going, you know, the 18, 19, 20, 21 year olds, to the adults with kids, to the grandparents with kids, you know, the grandchildren. And, it's definitely, so I guess sometimes it can be tough to figure out who you should kind of focus on, because there's so many different demographics that you're trying to hit, even though you're, it's like, okay, well, it's Disney World. So that's a good starting point, but that doesn't necessarily get you everything that you're looking to hit as far as demographics go.
No, I mean, that's too broad. And I actually was just working on a presentation I'm giving to travel agents next week, right before you called. And one of my best pieces of advice for them is to niche down, not too far down, but niche down, because you can't be broad and expect to be successful online. You have to really know who you're talking to. And so you want to hit a home run with your people. You don't want to be broad and sort of mildly appealing to a lot of people. You want to hit a home run with the right people.
Oh, definitely. I mean, and that doesn't even get into the international travelers and, you know, and all that, you know, Brazil or from England or Europe or wherever.
No, but I mean, certainly if you're niching down, your niche could be European travelers. You know, that could be your thing. I don't know anything about it really, so it's not my, you know, thing to focus on, but somebody should. You know, and I'm sure they do.
You don't know anything about the Fortnite?
No, I don't know. I have a fair amount of European readers, which is great. I just can never specialize in that because I'm not a pro.
Right. No, that's understandable. If you never came from there or don't, you know their demographic really well, then it could be tough to put yourself in their shoes.
Yeah, and they have a whole different set of challenges than, you know, people do in the United States. So
definitely.
I just do what I do. I think one of the challenges, though, with, you know, focusing is how to stay connected to that, especially for me, it's families with young kids. I don't have young kids. I haven't had a baby in 14 years. So it's about staying connected to what they're into and sort of evolving with them. And so that's sort of been one of the challenges, but it's been working out.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, because every 5 years to 10 years, things change, you know, especially for that demographic.
Yeah, it sure does. The kids grow up. I don't know what, you know, car seat rules are in 2015. They've changed a lot. So, you know, it's just trying to sort of stay educated and plugged in to your people.
So, all right. So you figured out what you wanted to niche in about Disney World. What were some of the first steps that you took?
I just spent a lot of time creating content. I mean, constant creation, something that I'm lucky enough now to be able to relax a little bit about, because once it's created, then you can kind of, step back and not work as many hours, but it's hard work. I'm sort of known for infographics and data collection, and the average time it takes to write a blog post for me is 12 hours, but some of them have been as much as 40. I spend a lot of time on design, a lot of time gathering data, and that takes time. But if you want to stick out, that's the sort of stuff you have to do. You know, there's lots of general websites that are providing the same basic information. So, you know, what are you going to do that's different? And the thing that I do is I spend an inhumane amount of time gathering information for people to use so they can pick the best restaurants for their trip or the best hotels or whatever it is.
Now, do you live in Florida?
No, I live in Texas. And I travel to Florida lots of times during the year.
Is that something that you'd like to do at some point?
Yeah, I'm gonna buy a condo next year probably, just to make it easier. Awesome. Yeah. So I can spend time. I'm not ready to leave Texas yet because my kids have ties here that they're not interested in leaving. But I think I'll get a condo just to allow more time there.
You know what? All right. So I have a personal question to ask then. Mm-hmm. Have you figured out what you're going to do as far as having a car there?
I Uber everywhere.
Oh, okay. All right. So yeah, you would have the condo, but no car there.
Probably. That's the plan. Yeah, Uber is so convenient there that I just use it constantly. And so when I'm looking at condos, it'll be kind of based on being close enough to Uber easily, I think. I don't really want to mess with buying a car and having it sit while I'm not there and all that kind of stuff.
True. That's a very fair point. Yeah, because that was one of the things, like, I didn't, you know, talk with my wife about the idea of, like, well, what if we did buy a condo down in Orlando? Well, how would we get to it? Well, I guess we'd have to take a taxi. But that, you know, because you can't have a car just sitting there at the, you know, and you can't necessarily rent it if you're, you know, rent a car for what, like a month or two during the summer?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not ideal either.
Yeah. You can always rent a car if you want to go very, you know, outside of the, you know, close vicinity. But I don't know. I rely on Uber. I think it would probably work.
Yeah, I would think so. I don't know if Uber can pick you up from the airport in Orlando.
They can't. No, they can take you to the airport, but they cannot pick you up. So
yeah, I was going
to
say, I didn't think they could, because a friend of mine had just tried to do that and couldn't get one to go to the airport.
Nope, they can't. So you'd have to figure that part of it out. But once you're...
They can drop you off, right? They just can't.
They can drop you off. They can't pick you up.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, that was the half that he had an issue with.
Yep.
So how did your family take all this this newfound Disney love?
Well, my immediate family, like my husband and kids, my kids don't really know any different, because I've loved it for so long that I don't think they remember, you know, life without it, because ever since the first trip we've been hooked and we've been going regularly. But like in terms of like launching the website and stuff, they weren't surprised I did it. I actually did it on Mother's Day. I always pick weird things to do on Mother's Day, like go to fighter jet air shows and just random stuff. But I launched it on Mother's Day. It was what I wanted to do. So they weren't surprised by that. But I will say that launching any kind of business, including an online business, is incredibly taxing on your family. And so I'm very attracted to like podcasts and websites where they do consider the family component, because I think it doesn't get talked about enough and it's a huge sacrifice. So while they are, you know, supportive of whatever you want to do and that you're finally launching this Disney World website, it's a lot for them to put up with, because you're not around a lot, you're busy, and your attention is on your business. And I've actually even heard some people refer to businesses as like almost like having an affair in terms of having that much attention, you know, away from your family. So I think it's important to sort of keep that in check, but it's a big, big challenge when you're focused on anything for that many hours.
No, I agree. Coming from the family business background, I could totally attest to that. And now with my own stuff, I mean, it's tough. I have to go out of my way to make sure that I'm making time for my wife and soon to be child. So it's tough because I'm still in the startup phase, still doing pretty much everything on my own, working endless hours. And they're, you know, because I don't have the money to outsource any of it. Once that changes, then, you know, then things can start to change.
Yeah. About a year ago, I hired an assistant, and it has changed my life. Like, it is so nice to know that you can take a step back and things will continue to run. You know, like I am at Disney World a lot. And so before I had an assistant, I would be at Disney World and exhausted, you know, walking 16 hours a day. And then I have to come back to my hotel and work for hours into the wee hours of the night to make sure I was keeping up with things. And that's just one example. I mean, just every day at home, if I want to have a weekend off, which I didn't do for years, it's nice to know that the emails are being answered by somebody that you trust. But I think what's hard is even when you do hire somebody to help you, you have to consciously dial back because you are so used to a certain pace, and, you know, pulling back and allowing your hours to be more sane is a conscious step, I think, that you have to take. Because, you know, I work 70 hours a week for 3 years. So now I need to purposely say, I don't have to do that anymore. It's not necessary. The work has been done. It's time to relax a little bit, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, it's tough. It can definitely be tough to turn it off, especially if you're used to doing it and fortunate enough not to burn yourself out in the process. Because it's easy. It's very easy to burn yourself out. And that's one of the reasons why I do try to take breaks and do stuff like that. But it's you gotta be passionate about what you're doing, because if you're not, you're gonna fall off that path really quick.
For sure. I mean, and I think that's why people say, you know, not only is the passion the thing that gets you started, you know, in the first place, but it has to be the thing that sustains you, because there's no way to push through that kind of exhaustion unless you love it. And, you know, fortunately, it's not just Disney World that for me is the passion, but it's the connection with the people and them having good trips. So it's, you know, it was easy for a while to exist on very little sleep when you know that the payoff is so good, but not, you know, just can't forget about what's going on at home and making sure that your personal life is in check. Cause it's not fun to, you know, celebrate success alone.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, you want to be successful and also have good relationships. So, I think it's good to take time off and don't decline, you know, invitations if possible, and, you know, try to make time for all that kind of stuff.
Definitely. Now, with all that said, what's been the biggest roadblock that you had to overcome?
I think one of the biggest challenges, especially earlier on, I've gotten more used to it, is negativity. It's, you know, it's hard when you come at things with a good spirit and intentions and you want to help people, and then to all of a sudden be getting negativity from not so much readers, although certainly there is a little bit of that every once in a while, but also people that run other websites who you might have been a fan of at one time. I mean, I used to just be a fan that read lots of websites, and then suddenly there's a lot of negativity coming from them. At Podcast Movement, I don't know if you saw Lou Mangello's speech.
I watched some of it. I didn't get to see the whole thing.
So one of the things, you know, he's Mr. Positivity.
Yeah,
and even he mentioned during his presentation that the negativity is shocking. And I was surprised to hear him say that because he rarely addresses it. And he said he almost didn't put it in. But it's true. It is shocking. And the thick skin that I've had to develop is not something I ever thought would be necessary. But it's happened. And I used to take things so personally and be upset for days about anything that came up. And now I'm more used to it. And, you know, there's enough positive to sort of outweigh it. But, you know, it's usually not justified. You know, I think it's important to accept constructive criticism, and people correct me all the time, and that's totally fine. But just unnecessary meanness is shocking when we're all just trying to have fun talking about a theme park. But that's definitely been one of the big, you know, sort of stumbling blocks.
Oh, you know, and I totally could see it. You know, I mean, Lou's been on the show before, and you know, he's like, you know, some people think I'm so positive, he's like wanting to punch me in the head because I'm just too positive. And, or you know, and just too, like, all about Disney or something like that. But it is difficult to deal with that, especially if you don't have the I know me personally, I mean, that's something I've had to work on over the years, developing thick skin about a lot of things. And, you know, I think that one of the things I've learned to do is, okay, something might bother me right now, but I've gotten better at flipping the switch and getting right back to what I needed to, like, what needs to be done, rather mm-hmm. than, like, dwelling on it like I used to, you know, constantly be dwelling on things.
Yeah, and I also think there's a confidence that comes as you, you know, have been around for a little while, and that is that you know that you are doing well with, you know, a decent number of people. So there's a confidence that comes with, oh, well, that guy was probably not great for me anyway. Better that he go now. I mean, like, there's this, at the beginning, it feels like you don't want any reader to be upset, or listener, we know, whatever your business is. You don't want anybody to be upset. You don't want anybody to stop reading or listening. You don't want anybody to escape, you know. But after a while, you realize it's not such a bad thing. You know, let them go find their people and you find yours.
Oh, I agree. And it's, you know what it is? It's all relative to the numbers, you know? You're like, well, if I have 10 people and one stops, you know, starts fighting with me, that one person, you know, is 1/10 of my my readers or my listeners or my, you know, people I consider friends. And that's a pretty high percentage, 1/10.
Yeah.
And in fact, that's such a high percentage that you know, that 1/10 could go and tell those other 9 people what happened and make a case for why they shouldn't, you know, be friends or follow or listen or whatever to you.
Yeah.
So exactly. As time goes on, obviously, the more people that you get in your court, it does make it easier because you do build that confidence, like you were saying, to say, you know what, I am making a difference. I'm doing good things for good people. And there's enough people that feel that way that, you know, 1 or 2 or 4 or 5 people is not going to make or break what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And the statistics are incredibly low. Like, the negativity is incredibly low, but it's just unfortunate that those people stick out sometimes, you know, over all the positive stuff. But, you know, it's a skill. It's not something most people have to deal with. You know, you don't have people walking up to you on the street saying you're horrible or you make no sense. Like, that's just rude. But on the internet, people feel like it. So it's like, it's an acquired skill, but it's definitely been one of the hardest things because I'm a sensitive person, and it's sort of hard to know how to keep it in perspective. But I think I'm pretty good though. I've gotten used to it over the last few years.
So Shannon, growing up, what was your childhood dream?
I was a really nerdy kid. I mean, like, so stereotypical. I was the skinniest, scrawniest, glasses, buck teeth, obsessed with, like, math and asthma. I had asthma. I still do. Like, I was just the worst just in terms of stereotypes. And I really love computers, but they just weren't a thing as much then as they are now. And so I sort of grew up in a house where my parents really liked stereotypes, and I was not that. And
just not the right stereotype.
I wasn't the stereotype of a girl that they had in mind. And so, you know, I was being given dolls and sewing machines and all this stuff. I'm like, I don't want it. I just want computers and encyclopedias, and I want to do math. Like, I've just really loved learning and nerdy stuff. And so I think if I'd been born 20 years later, it would have been heaven. But at the time, it was a struggle to sort of, you know, figure that out. But anyway, so I went to college with an engineering scholarship, computer engineering. That's what I wanted to do. And engineering floor of the dorm, engineering scholarship, engineering degree. I was hardcore engineering. And it only took a couple of weeks for me to realize I am not like these people. Like I am just, and I'm married to an engineer right now, so I can say this. I just wasn't like them. And so I wasn't quite sure what to do with that. But it's just, I was more extroverted. I wasn't as nerdy. I was a little bit more mainstream than they were. You know, I love pop culture and all this, you know, kind of stuff. But also there's a business side that I found appealing that engineers don't usually. So I sort of tweaked my major and went into a degree that allowed me to do business and computers at the same time. And so I think it's just important to kind of find your way. You know, if something's not working for you, then you have to sort of find your way until you get it right. And my daughter's a junior in college now, and this is a, you know, a process that she's going through. And I think it's just important. I keep telling her to trust her instincts and go with what makes sense for her, which I think nowadays is easier to do. But when you're a computer nerd in the 80s, it wasn't quite as easy.
No, I'd imagine it wasn't. I mean, it wasn't much easier in the 90s either. early 2000s, not so much. It's really only pretty much since the iPhone came out. In 2007, things have really changed.
My son is 13, and he's very much like me, except he's way more brilliant and introverted. But he has been developing apps and programming since third grade. And he has apps in the App Store and, you know, bought his own Apple Watch. Like, it's a new time. And it's, you know, he might be, you know, so brilliant because we've been able to encourage it. You know, he has nerdy parents that know what to do with him. But it's sort of an exciting time to be alive for people like that.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I kind of wish I was maybe born a little bit later, 10 years later, than I was. Cause it would have made a bit of a difference, especially if I continued, you know, was on the path that I was already on. But yeah, so, with all that said, Shan, what does your dreams for the future look like?
Oh, that's so hard, isn't it?
It can be.
So I'm really passionate about evolving and always getting better. So like I'm changing things sort of all the time. And when I quit my corporate job, I spent a month writing an ebook. Then I launched it. Then the next month I created the podcast and launched it. Then I created new features for the website and launched it. Like I just keep constantly adding things. So I've been working on a project for the past year that I will be launching hopefully at the end of this year, which I can't talk about while we're being recorded. But it's big and I hope to launch it soon. But I'm also like, I own the DLR prep school site, which is for Disneyland, and my friend runs that, and I'm going to just be expanding that. So DCL prep school, you know, that kind of stuff. I'll just sort of be creating new sites and then finding people that are like franchisees to run them who are experts on those topics.
Wow. Well, that's really cool. And a year on a product is, I mean, that's a long time, but I guess it's not, you know, with the whole family life and everything else that you already have going on. So did you think that's a long time, a year?
Oh, it is a long time, but I just keep adding and adding and adding to it. It's a big, big project. So this is why I work 70 hours a week. Because I've got a lot going on. I mean, I have to keep the website going as is and then create new things in the background so that everything continues to grow. So
now, like, obviously, I don't want you to give away what your project is, but whatever that project is, have you been taking in, like, input from your already built community?
No, I would say that I've had an ebook for a couple of years, and it's an expansion of that, and it's much more involved. And I know the ebook works with, you know, my readers and has for a long time. So I'm just sort of expanding it and making it more interactive and providing more tools for people. So I'm confident it'll work. It's just that it takes a lot of time and money, especially when you bootstrap everything. It takes time to make sure it's all funded.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, that's the thing, right? You could, and the great thing is even if it weren't, like, if it didn't, you know, hit a home run right out of the park or right out of the gate, you didn't spend money, right? Like, you could spend all that money, get it done in maybe half the time, so like say 6 months. But then if it doesn't, you know, hit it out of the park, then you're like stuck with the bill of this thing that's like, oh, what do I do now? Now I gotta like, you know, work to get it fixed as quickly as possible to what people are looking for.
Yeah, it's been paid for, you know, as I go, but it's not going to fail though. I mean, I just am confident in that. And I think when you know your people, it's easy to know. Like, you know, I don't believe in surveys or polling really, you know, of readers, because if I ask people what they want, they don't ever give me, they almost never give me answers of things I actually do. But what I can do is infer what is helpful to people. Like if people are asking questions, you know, certain types of questions, then I know I need to focus on that topic and provide them some data that they've never had before. So I'm not a fan of polling. I'm not a fan of surveying, but I do know my people. So when it comes time to execute a project, one of the reasons it's taken so long is that I want it to be perfect for them. And so we just keep tweaking and modifying to make that work. So it'll work. We just need to get it launched hopefully later this year.
Oh, no, I'm sure. Well, I was just saying in terms of like, say someone else that was just getting started or something like that, like in your case, when you first got started. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Hey, I have money. I have a job. I could pay someone to help me write this ebook. I can, you know, throw all my notes together, you know, make the bullet points and then ship it off to somebody who's just going to craft the book for me so I can get it out faster. But then if it doesn't hit that home run, then you're stuck with the bill versus like, okay, I lost this time, but look how much I learned in the process to apply it in other ways as well down the line.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there's always a lot of debate in internet marketing circles about what do you do? Do you launch with a product or do you, you know, launch a site and then develop the product? And obviously I'm a fan of launching and then developing the product because then you know it's money and time well spent and you know you're creating something that actually will be useful to people. And I think in terms of, you know, like minimum viable product is a thing that people talk about a lot in terms of, you don't need to spend tens of thousands of dollars to create a big thing. You need to do a small thing first to test out your idea. And for me, the ebook kind of is that. Like, I know that information all gathered in, you know, one place is helpful. So now I'm going to expand upon it and do something even bigger.
Oh definitely. Yeah, and an ebook in a lot of cases is the minimal viable product. For anybody who wants to write one, there's plenty of resources out there. But really just get started. But I would say before you get started, format it. If you're planning on getting a print copy of it, my number one advice would be figure out the format of the book first. Is it 6x9? Then don't write it in 8.5x11, because when you go to shrink it down to that, it's not going to look quite the way you want it to.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I did everything at the beginning by myself. Like, I created the ebook myself and everything, but I'm a fan of letting experts do their thing. So I now have an illustrator I work with. And so he creates the format of the ebook. So it looks really nice. And, you know, my goal is for it to look nice on a screen where one page appears at a time and people can easily paginate through, but certainly they could print it off if they wanted to. But yeah, I really like outsourcing to people that are good at their jobs.
And, you know, and that's another thing right there as far as having the ability to relinquish that power. Like me, I wrote my book. My first book, I formatted my book. I did all the illustrations in the book, even though I'm not an artist. And that was pretty much the whole point, was to show the power of what someone who wasn't something could accomplish. But, you know, going forward, I would like to work with people who actually are experts, like you said, in what they do. But the problem is that means I have to like let some of that power go from myself.
Right. But I think that, like you were talking about stumbling blocks and growth, and I think that is a stumbling block for a lot of people because they want to hoard all of the responsibilities, because at the beginning, that is what you do. So what started for me, I was a one-person programmer, designer, writer, server admin, illustrate. I did everything myself, all social media. There was nothing I didn't do. I did everything myself. And as time has gone on, I now have an assistant who manages most of my email and my Pinterest account, which is 30% of my website traffic. So I want her to focus on that. Mm. And she writes for me. Like, she does lots of stuff. Like, she does that. I have a server admin who monitors the server. I have a team of programmers who do all the new functionality for the site. It's beyond my level, my skill level. I have illustrators that create infographics and ebook. So you have to build a tribe. I mean, you have to, they're better at it than you are. I mean, you know, let's be real. We can't be everything. So, you know, I want to let the programmers do their thing. And they have, you know, sped up my website, allowed it to load faster, allowed it to be responsive, things I was not doing on my own. So, I mean, I think you have to. And what I did very early on, and this is something you might want to do now, is to just start writing down all the things you're doing and sort of documenting them in a way that allows you to more easily hand it off to somebody when that time comes. I did it way before I was ready to hire anybody. So I knew that it would be coming someday. And when it did, I was ready.
I love that advice. I mean, that's something, you know, having to write out what you do after the fact, you always miss something, especially because you are taking it on shouldering it all yourself. So, taking that time to even just, you know, write some cliff notes of what you're doing and how you go about doing it, is important. I bet you it helped you get your team together a heck of a lot faster.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, especially my assistant. I mean, everybody else I sought out like for their specialty. But when she came on, it was like, okay, here's a whole bunch of stuff that we need to figure out, and kind of already had an idea of how to do it. And she's so great at it. I can't even imagine me doing it again. So, yeah, it worked out. But I mean, you have to have it. You know, I posted an opening for an assistant and 333 people applied. And because I knew who, you know, what skills I needed, I was able to focus on only those people that I felt really could do a good job. And that's worked out.
Did you use like, was it Odesk or Elance?
No, I went to my readers.
Oh.
And everybody else I've used pretty much from Elance. But for my assistant, I needed somebody that knew a lot about Disney World. And you're not going to find that on Elance. So I have a hard enough time explaining Disney World to the illustrators and programmers I work with, let alone my assistant who has to answer most of my emails. So no, she was just a reader. And a very knowledgeable reader. So, but everybody else has been from Elance.
Well, I mean, you don't have to answer this question, but I'm interested to know, like, is you her primary employer at this point, or does she do stuff for other people?
She is part time with me, and she works for a school district as well.
Oh, okay, okay. So yeah, so she has other responsibilities other than just that. Cause that's something that's, it's tough when you're trying to figure out like in my position where it's like, hey, I would love to be able to get an assistant. I got to get some money in first, but you know, assistant's right up there next to money, and, trying to figure out like, okay, well, how much do I have to pay somebody? You know, what skill sets and like you answered with the, you know, start writing stuff down now. Don't wait until it's, you know, you're doing all this stuff and you're like, well, what's the most important thing I need to offload? After the fact. So
yeah, and I think like for me it was okay, there's one social media platform that's responsible for 30% of my traffic, so that's, I need somebody who can focus on that and be consistent. And then, you know, email, it just got overwhelming to have to keep up with all the emails, and so that's something she keeps an eye on every day. So yeah, for me it was kind of obvious, and we've evolved a bit, but it's worked out really well in the last year. And I think that, you know, since we've talked about internet marketing a lot, one of the dangers in staying in the internet marketing niche and only doing what people say is sometimes it doesn't feel right. And for me, outsourcing to other countries for VA work that's quite cheap didn't make sense for a lot of reasons. So my assistant doesn't make VA, you know, wages from other countries. She makes a decent American wage, and you know, you get what you pay for, and mm-hmm. she does a good job. So I think you have to be willing to pay for good work.
No, I agree. I mean, I love the story. I mean, some of the VA stories are really nice, though. I mean, you gotta admit, like, hey, somebody had a, you know, wasn't making any money. Now they, and they lived in a really, you know, crappy part of a country, and their living conditions sucked, but they had the internet, they had the drive, and now they're moving out into a better country, you know?
Yeah, for them, you know, that might make sense. It just didn't make sense for me.
Right, right. No, I agree. And in my case, I would love to have an assistant that's in my backyard that I could see, you know, once a week or twice a week, rather than somebody that's online. But that's, you know, that's just me. I know a lot of people that wouldn't want that or need that. But to me, it's just something that I would like. But that then, you know, as you said, it does come at a cost. You do get what you pay for.
Yep. Exactly.
So, Shannon, before we share how people can connect with you and get to your website again and everything like that, is there any last thoughts you'd like to share?
You know, I just think that it's so gratifying when you finally do follow, you know, whatever you might be dreaming about, that I hope that anybody who's thinking about it will take that leap. But just know that there's a lot of work associated with it. But in the end, it's worth it.
Well, hey, if you love what you do, then you're not really working that hard.
That's
or it's not
right.
That well, not that hard, but it's not the work that you're doing isn't hard. You know,
it's good stuff. There's you might be doing all good stuff for a lot of hours, but it's at least good stuff.
So, Shannon, I would love for you to share how people can connect with you online.
Well, so my main hub is www.prepschool.com, but I also am on every form of social media. I don't think you can name one I'm not on at WDW Prep School, but I also have a weekly podcast called WDW Prep to Go. And I focus on strategy and ideas for people planning Disney World trips, whereas most Disney World podcasts tend to be more newsy. I focus on strategy. I do cover some news, but I like to pick a topic and tell people sort of strategy ideas on that topic every week. And so that's been going really well. It's in the top 5% of all podcasts on iTunes. So very proud of that.
You should be. Is that at wdwpreptogo.com or is that part of the prepschool.com?
There's tabs at the top of my site. There's a tab for the blog and there's a tab for the podcast. So wdwprepschool.com has the podcast episodes and blog posts and things like that. All in one place.
Oh, awesome. I will have that in the show notes.
Perfect. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time, Shannon. And obviously, you're a quite busy person. So I really appreciate you taking the time today.
I appreciate you having me. It was a nice break in between making notes for my presentation next week.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. Thank you again.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dreamers Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Dreamers Podcast. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/Dreamers Podcast. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Dreamers Podcast, please send an email to j@jpar.co. This podcast is copyright 2014 by jpar.co.